Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. 8:07 on this Sunday morning. It is time for the second hour of your Sunday Spin for July 31st, the last Sunday of the month, as we kick off August. HBO has this great show called Last Week Tonight that's hosted by John Oliver. And John Oliver used to be on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and now has his own show. And you see this every 4 years where campaigns play various music at rallies. And then you see the, now on social media, Twitter, but it used to be, you know, statements from the musical artists saying, hey, we don't want you to play our song. We didn't give you permission for that. And so last week's host, John Oliver, got a group of musical artists together, Usher, John Mellencamp, Josh Groban, Sheryl Crow, Cyndi Lauper, Michael Bolton, Heart, Imagine Dragons, and they had one theme for the politicians. Stop using their songs.
Yes, turn on your laser light show. Fire up your confetti machine. Bring out your smiling backdrop of ethnic leader-verse teams.
Stop using our music. That's a one and only rule. We didn't write these songs to make your campaign stop seem cool.
Don't use our song. You should use it wrong. It might seem appealing, but you're just stealing.
Don't use our song. It just seems wrong.
By the time this tune is through, you'll be lucky if we don't sue.
Don't use our song, no.
That's licensing. You gotta call my publisher, okay?
You always take our music out of context anyway.
Why would Reagan be playing Born in the USA?
It's about Vietnam.
Oh, thank you for not paying me. That's a license you didn't buy.
If I wanted to sing and not get paid, I'd be on Spotify.
Don't use our song.
That's a bit of Don't Use Our Songs from Last Week Tonight from John Oliver and HBO. And I thought that would be just such a great introduction for my good friend Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress and co-founder of 1 Million Degrees, who's joining us here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And, you know, given you got these conventions back-to-back and all of the rhetoric and insight, I just thought a little bit of music would break things up a little bit.
It reminds me of 12 years ago, 2004, on the John Kerry for President campaign, and I was his communications director in Missouri, one of the supposed swing states. And the senior staff of the campaign would actually send out emails, what's your best song for this event, this spirited, you know, this sort of atmosphere, because they kept using the same old songs again. And I noticed the other night when President Obama came in to speak at the DNC, and with that huge ovation, that they chose one of my favorites for this campaign stuff that they used all that used so much, which is City of Blinding Lights by U2. And obviously there's more of these artists on the left.
Yes.
That don't mind. And then you hear in the news, there's just fewer musicians, or at least famous musicians, complain when those on the right use it, and then it becomes a storyline, right?
Oh, exactly, exactly. And truly, you know, when you're out there on the road every day in these campaign forums, you almost become inured to the music. And in fact, it's like when you hear the end of rally cue up the music, it's like, okay, pack your bags, time to get on the bus for the you know,
right,
the next trip to the airport kind of thing.
If they play that, this is my fight song one more time for Hillary. I don't even know the name of the artist. I'm too out of the loop.
It's Katy Perry.
Oh, it's a Katy Perry, of course, right, who played at the convention.
Right.
But I'm not even saying it's a bad song, but I've heard it so many times with her walking in that's driving me nuts.
Get used to it.
Get used
to it. Well, you know, I want to talk to you first about the story that's in the news right now, and that's the Khan family, who Donald Trump basically saying that Mrs. Khan, well, I've been told by people that she was told not to talk. Another comment that he made too was when Khadr Khan accused him of not reading the Constitution, and Trump's response was he has no right to say that. And one of the more interesting things I saw on social media was Mo Alethi, my friend who's now out at George Washington University, responded, well, yeah, he does have a right. His son died for that right.
Well, not only does he have that right, he actually has an empirical basis in it. If somebody refers to Article 12 of the Constitution, you actually you have a factual background to accuse them of not having read it. I mean, you know, someone asked me yesterday, what do you think were the two most powerful speeches from the whole DNC, which is very difficult to limit it to two. And I kind of had to divide it. Well, do you mean the headliners, or do you mean everybody else? Because if it's everybody, and maybe including the headliners, Mr. Khan's speech was, I was blown away. I think most people were.
It was something you didn't expect.
Not only did you not expect it, not only did he have the unparalleled, except for Donald Trump, everyone else in America, I think, realized he had the moral authority to have the right to say that. But then the way, this skilled way he brought out the Constitution, and I think I read that actually that was no gimmick either. He carries a pocket Constitution. I have one of those.
I think he has some kind of a scholarship program or something.
He's a Harvard lawyer, someone else told me.
But everybody in that scholarship program gets a pocket copy of the Constitution.
Right. Well, you did give me an opening here by bringing up Trump and his knowledge or lack of knowledge. And I don't know if people saw this, but in the last, I think, 24 to 36 hours, the Houston Chronicle followed the suit of the Washington Post in already disqualifying Donald Trump from its editorial board submission. Basically, effectively, they're endorsing Hillary Clinton, only the third time, I believe, they've ever endorsed a Democrat. And just one paragraph, it's one of the clearest paragraphs I've read in a year about this, if you don't mind. The ed board said, quote, any one of Trump's less than sterling qualities, his erratic temperament, his dodgy business practices, his racism, his Putin-like strongman inclinations and faux populist demagoguery, his contempt for the rule of law, his ignorance, is enough to be disqualifying. His convention speech comment, I alone can fix it, should make every American shudder. He is, we believe, a danger to the republic. And I just bring that up because you don't – that's the Washington Post and the Houston Chronicle. And the Houston Chronicle is, you know – not compared to a lot of papers, not some liberal screed. And to disqualify someone 100 days before the election because of their judgment of his character, I mean, they don't even talk that much about the issues.
Well, character, I mean, character matters.
Yes, right. But usually people are given a chance, a major party candidates, they're excused some of their, you know, it's not like Hillary Clinton doesn't have skeletons too. They're all over the place on national television every day. But, you know, those are seen, at least by some of these ed boards, as errors in judgment versus a man who's, you know, done these things that are still shocking to people, including what you started off with, what he said about Mr. Khan. I was just listening to it before I came into the studio, some of the things that Trump said yesterday. It's just shocking to me that an adult person could say that about a family that lost their son, much less lost their son taking, how he phrased it, 10 brave steps he didn't have to save other lives.
In serving in defense of this country.
It's amazing. It is.
We're speaking with Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress. I'm Rick Pearson. We're here in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and joining me here in studio is Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress. And we're talking about post-convention and just the daily Donald Trump. I mean, it's almost like you could do a whole newspaper versus everything. It's almost like he has to have the last word.
Almost.
Well, but I mean,
yeah.
It's just he can't be trumped, as it were. even though he digs a deeper hole on some of this. And, you know, all campaign season, over a year long, everybody has thought, oh, well, now that's going to be the one that gets him.
Right. And, well, and people have also thought, well, now he's going to pivot. That word's overused.
Well, right.
Or change or modify. And I think the irony is this. The real irony of this race is, at least so far, we have 100 days so it could change. But to your point, Rick, the irony is that he created this larger than even his larger than life image was by speaking and saying the things he's done in this campaign that have shocked people and inspired a lot of voters, right? He yes. won a record number of Republican votes, at least in the primary. But the thing is, you can see when he's on that teleprompter, which is very rare, like at the RNC, he's not comfortable with it.
Right.
He's getting a little better at it, but he doesn't sound like himself. And Trump is somebody who really, he says this himself, he feeds off the energy of the crowd. And by the way, if you notice, if you really watch one of his rallies in full, a 30, 40-minute rally or whatever, you'll see he baits the crowd. He throws stuff out and he asks a question mark with a lilt in his voice till he gets the reaction he wants. And then he drives it home. You know, he goes, right? Right? And so the thing is, when you behave that way for a year and you get the positive reinforcement
right.
of voters, well, how... Why would he? And by the way, first of all, I don't think he thinks he should change strategically. But even if he thought so, even if he agreed with his advisors who are saying to him every day, look, you got to get swing voters in these states. You can't. Your voters only get to vote once a piece. But even if he agreed with them, if he changed his whole rap, no pun intended, RAP, if he changed his whole rap in these rallies, then he'd look like a phony.
Right.
It's not him.
But. At the same time, so we've got the flap with the Kahn family. You've got him accusing Hillary Clinton of trying to rig the debates.
The commission set it up more than a year ago, right?
Even though the commission, and then he tells George Stephanopoulos in this interview on ABC that he got a letter from the NFL saying that the league wasn't happy about the scheduling in conflict with some Sunday or Monday night football games. And the NFL says, we never sent him a letter.
Right.
You had him.
It's actually a believable excuse. That's actually somewhat believable that the NFL wouldn't want to slice off its, you know, you could, that's more.
But they didn't send a letter.
I know.
He said I got
I'm
a letter.
I'm saying that of the things that he says that aren't truthful, that one is actually rational.
And then there was a story that when he was in Colorado Springs, he and his entourage were stuck in the hotel elevator or whatever going to this rally. And the Colorado Springs Fire Department helped get them out of the elevator. And then he goes on at the rally to condemn the Colorado Springs Fire Marshal for stopping people from coming into the rally because of fire safety rules.
Right. Well, but by the way, didn't he say this in his book in the 80s? He called it truthful embellishment. He said that's part of his strategy. The old expression, can't beat him, join him? Well, Trump, actually, the genius that he has as a candidate or as maybe in success in business is he takes self-promotion to a whole nother level. It's like he creates a self-fulfilling prophecy. He pushes these things that sound like it's okay to be on board and that he's way down the field from where he is and you better jump on, you know, jump.
Right.
You can't beat us.
Over.
Right, join us
yeah.
or you're going to get run over. And he knows one mode, which is to pound. I mean, I've never met a person, much less a candidate, who had trouble saying, I'm sorry about something, anything.
Right. Or who has acknowledged a mistake.
Right, it's sort of a human thing.
let's look at the aftermath of the Democratic National Convention now. And, you know, so much, truly, it was in some respects similar to the Republican National Convention in that the questions of unity. And,
right.
And, you know, here on the Democratic side, it's like questions of transference.
Right.
And I still think that's going to be the standing question until Election Day is whether the energy, enthusiasm, excitement is there for Hillary Clinton, spawned by the work of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Yeah, no, look, I've made no, certainly in things I've written, I've made no secret of the fact that I favor Trump losing. have from a summer ago because of just his behavior. Even though the book, thank you for mentioning, Unlock Congress, is nonpartisan. You know that. You've read it. It's structural problems that hold back our legislative branch and the system. So I say that by way of saying that the Bernie Sanders folks, I think Bernie Sanders is going to work his heart out over the next 100 days. And I really mean it, not just because he said he would, but because he wants to be a chairman of the budget committee or one of the large committees. You don't get that unless the Senate wins, unless, you know, and if you did, if you don't have a president from your party in the White House, you're not going to get much done anyway. So it would really be all for naught. And I think he'll, as you say, the transference will be, he'll be making that case, I think, more and more to his folks. I don't think it was the right place to make that practical case at the convention. He did what he could. I'll tell you what, though, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. I was astonished to hear the Bernie supporters booing even the president a few times, but the former president, Clinton, and Hillary Clinton, whether you like her or don't like her, this was 2 days after the roll call. They had their shot, and their own candidate decided to put the votes in her column. That they had to have, that the Clinton folks had to go as far as to have their whips on the floor, yelling Hillary or USA every time the Bernie people spoke up and interrupted the main primetime speakers. I was really surprised and sort of saddened, regardless of party. I mean, the process is over. I didn't support Bernie or Hillary in the primary. So, you know, I supported Lawrence Lessig, a quite serious guy that most people don't know about, and he didn't make the debates. But I gave up on Lawrence a long time ago. And as soon as that roll call was done and the nomination was complete, I was really surprised at that. And it was really disappointing, I thought. But I think that those folks are going to come around because it's working against their own purposes. At some point, I know how it feels. I've run long shot campaigns, most of mine. I know how it feels to lose. I really know. And there is no worse feeling. After a year of 70, 80-hour weeks or whatever, it's brutal. But then, you know, when Gary Chico lost to Barack Obama in a 7-way primary, and we didn't even come, you know, nobody came close to Barack at the end, but when he was a U.S. Senator, we got behind him and supported him for U.S. Senate and then for the presidency because we believed in him more so than the other choice, Alan Keyes and then John McCain. So I think these folks, it made me feel bad.
Well,
I don't know how else to say it.
On the Daily Show, Trevor Noah was now taking over, and they had a couple of reporters out on the streets interviewing Bernie or bus supporters,
right?
Basically saying that, well, you know, Bernie Sanders has basically said vote for Hillary Clinton, or it's going to be Donald Trump. And one of the supporters they talked to said, well, that's not the question. That's not the question you should be asking. And so the reporter said, "What is the question?" And the response was,
"It's crickets."
Yeah. So, but here again, on both sides, you have this issue of, well, you know, they're not my candidate. They're not my candidate. But if you're not,
that's not how our system works.
But yeah, it comes down to you know, it's either Hillary or it's Donald Trump.
And actually, another the second irony, I guess, of our conversation is that if you ask Bernie Sanders, you don't even have to ask. Donald Trump stands for, outside of possibly the trade issue, everything he's done in his professional life, set aside his family, is at cross purposes with everything Bernie Sanders has stood for as an independent senator from Vermont, carving out that independent space and speaking to a socialist democratic viewpoint. It's not even left of center; it's way left. So the idea that out of spite you would, or anger or disappointment that you would vote for Trump, which I don't think many of them will, but stay home, which helps
I think
Trump,
is the real concern.
Well, right, that's the real concern. I don't think it's going to happen. And the funny thing is, even though Hillary and Bernie were much further apart ideologically than the back then Senator Obama and Senator Clinton were in 08, there's more Democrats in poll after poll that are with Hillary Clinton than there were Hillary folks for Obama back
right.
then. So, and there's another sort of irony that there's not that much to worry about right now. But it, in what could be a very close election, you can't leave anything to chance. You got to get that number. If you're the Democrats, you have to get it as high as possible. And so does Trump. He's got a lot of work to do with the Republicans.
Absolutely, absolutely. Michael Golden, author of Unlock Congress. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate the conversation as always.
Always a great way to start Sunday. Thanks, Rick.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.